Cancer Advances, a Cleveland Clinic podcast for medical professionals, exploring the latest innovative research and clinical advances in the field of oncology. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cancer Advances. I'm your host, Dr. Dale Shepherd, a medical oncologist here at Cleveland Clinic, overseeing our TOSIC Phase 1 and Cleveland Clinic sarcoma programs. Today, I'm happy to be joined by Dr. Zach Burke, an orthopedic oncologist in the sarcoma program here at Cleveland Clinic. He is here today to talk to us about limb-sparing surgical techniques for pediatric sarcomas. So, welcome, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Shepherd. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So maybe start off, give us a little idea. What's your role here at Cleveland Clinic? What do you do?
Yeah, I have sort of two hats that I wear here. I am a surgeon in the sarcoma program. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon by training with a specialty in musculoskeletal oncology, also called orthopedic oncology. So clinically, I take care of patients with tumors of the bones and the connective tissue. So that includes benign tumors, cancerous tumors, the soft tissues, the bones, kids to adults. On the other side of the spectrum, I also have a lab here and devote some of my time to researching both the treatment of cancers of the bones and soft tissues and also the complications that arise from that and how we can better take care of folks who have these diseases.
All right. Maybe we'll touch on some of that here in a little bit, but
yeah.
Kind of the primary topic we were going to talk about was limb-sparing surgical techniques in pediatric cancers. So give us an overview, just a big picture. What exactly is a limb-sparing surgical procedure?
So it's helpful to kind of define what the common problems are and maybe take a brief step back into where we've been historically and where we are now. So typically in a pediatric patient, when you're talking about limb salvage, a sarcoma is the cancer that we're talking about. So sarcomas are a broad group of cancers, and there's many different types. The common ones that we deal with, particularly in children, are osteosarcoma and Ewing's sarcoma, and those are both cancers that arise in the bone in relatively young patients typically. So historically, you know, 40, 50 years ago, when kids or really any patients were diagnosed with a sarcoma in the limbs, the treatment was amputation. We didn't have good chemotherapies like you're involved with, good treatments to treat them systemically. And we didn't have good imaging to look at that tumor in a detailed anatomic sense to understand what we could do with it. So historically, amputation was the answer. And somewhere in the last 30 to 40 years, we had significant advancements in chemotherapy delivery to save these patients' lives, in imaging in terms of CT and MRI to specifically define these tumors and the anatomical structures in relation to the tumors. And so that was the advent of limb salvage. And the idea there is you take the tumor out, and you preserve the limb and you preserve the function of the limb.
So we think about that shift, and it's kind of incredible we've had such a shift. What percentage of patients do you think still undergo amputation? Because I got to tell you, I think that's the first thing people think of still. And so despite the changes, everyone still thinks amputation. So what percentage do you think still has amputation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to illustrate how far we've come in a short period of time, most sort of literature that looks at this and clinically in my practice and the practices that I've been around, you know, 80 to 90% of pediatric patients are candidates for limb salvage surgery. So it's quite high.
So that's impressive.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that make pediatric cases unique to adult cases? So you see both. What are some of the unique features of pediatric cases?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, regardless of the limb salvage potential, pediatric cases are always a challenge because there are unique social situations and there's a unique challenge to a child with cancer. And so that always presents a challenge and you know, the social support network and the challenges of dealing with childhood cancer are sort of inherent in that. Beyond the general aspect of things, in terms of limb salvage, there are some unique aspects to pediatric cases. And one is that kids are still growing. So that's a primary challenge when we address limb salvage is how do you save a limb and account for growth changes that may result from that. So kids grow through their bones, through their physis, their growth plates. And in some resections, you may be able to not involve those, but in many resections for a tumor, you have to compromise the growth of the limb. And so an area of pediatric limb salvage surgery that is constantly evolving and has continued to grow is how do we account for differences in leg length that result from limb salvage. A couple of other areas that are important to consider when you're talking about pediatric limb salvage are the activity level of kids and the expected duration of whatever you do. So both of those things lead to a need for more durability in what we do for pediatric limb salvage. So if you're replacing a part of a bone that's taken out in a 70 or 80 year old with cancer, their activity level may be relatively low. And they may not need that implant for another 30 years. Our hope is that with our pediatric limb salvage patients, that we can retain for them a high level of activity and that they're going to be using this implant or this reconstruction for 50, 60, 70 years down the road. And so that, you can imagine, presents its own unique challenges.
And I guess as we've moved toward these procedures, what sort of work has been going on to sort of maximize mobility and things? What reconstructive techniques or surgical techniques, what has made, you mentioned imaging and chemo in terms mm-hmm. of keeping people alive and being able to determine, but what kind of advances have been made in terms of surgical techniques and reconstructive techniques to make that possible?
Yeah. So there are quite a few, and frankly, it's an actively evolving field. You know, it's pediatric limb salvage is not a one size fits all field, and there is a need, and the norm is creative solutions to difficult problems. So where we've been historically, there are two sort of means, broadly speaking, by which you can reconstruct a limb that's had a big segment of bone and muscle and other tissues taken out. And those would be, broadly speaking, metal or an endoprosthesis, which is like a very large joint replacement and bone replacement, and bulk donor bone. So things like allograft that may be just bone, osteoarticular allograft that includes joint surface, may can include tendons and soft tissue attachments. So those are the two primary means historically where we've been with limb salvage surgery. And those still have use. In particular, endoprostheses are still very commonly used, and those have advanced tremendously over the last couple of decades. More recently, there's been quite a bit of interest in what we sort of broadly call biologic techniques. And the idea there is that there's nothing quite as durable as native bone. So a kid's bone healing to bone that is living bone and viable bone. And so biologic techniques can sort of run a spectrum of reconstructive techniques. So one that's been in use for a long time and I think gaining popularity is a free vascularized fibula. And what that means is we actually take in collaboration with our plastic surgery colleagues, typically a piece of the fibula bone from the child's leg, and it can be the opposite leg, it can be the same leg, or if we're doing a reconstruction in the arm, obviously it can be leg to arm. And that's removed with its blood supply, its blood vessel, and it's plugged in to a bone defect in the reconstruction area. And the blood vessels are sewn back together so that is a viable living piece of bone. And that's something that's been around for a while, but is gaining popularity, particularly in the pediatric limb salvage circles, as a very durable means of reconstructing bone defects. Some other sort of more biologic techniques are things like a bone transport technique. That is really sort of on the cutting edge and not widely used, but that basically means you use the healing potential of bones, which is particularly robust in children, to slowly heal that segment of bone in over time. And there's a very technical way that this is done, and it requires sort of fixation of that technique or rather fixation of that area and immobilization for a long period of time, but you use the body's regenerative potential to grow that area in over time, and that's also potentially a very durable technique.
And does that help out with things like the things you mentioned earlier about growth of bones over time and things like that?
It can. So the growth issue is not resolved in and of itself by either of those techniques. So you can account for growth in different ways. There is even a version of the fibula technique that I described where the fibula is transported and plugged in for being viable bone, where there's a technique called physeal transfer where you actually take the fibula with the top growth plate and you can put it in, oftentimes you might see it in the shoulder, and you can actually get growth from the growth plate that was in the fibula in the shoulder. None of these solutions are perfect. So there's a trade-off for all of these. When you take a big piece of bone out of a kid's leg, they do have repercussions and potentially complications from that. So that's a big thing, you know, that I think is critical when you're talking to a family and a child about limb salvage surgery, is you have to really get to know a kid and a family. You have to bring your expertise and your team's expertise to bear and say, you know, here's what you can expect with these different techniques. Here's the upside, but here's the downside. And complications and returns to the operating room are a reality, you know, particularly when you have patients that you're following for 10, 20, 30 years after reconstruction. There is an expectation that there are going to be bumps in the road and that you have to overcome those.
You mentioned involving the team. Tell us a little bit about how this is kind of a multidisciplinary effort.
Yeah, absolutely. So sarcoma surgery is a team sport through and through, and something that I really love about the field. It sort of attracts people who are intellectually humble and interested in bringing all minds together to take care of a patient. So, you know, as pertains to pediatric limb salvage, you routinely have, you know, people like yourself in the sarcoma, hematology, oncology setting who are administering chemotherapy and systemic treatments for patients with bone sarcoma. You have somebody like myself or my partners here who do limb salvage surgery. Radiation oncologists may or may not be in play with a pediatric limb salvage patient. There is times we do use radiation. In your standard bone sarcoma treatment, you may not use it, but they are certainly a part of the multidisciplinary team for pediatric patients. And you have things like plastic surgeons, pediatric surgeons. There are a number of experts that we have involved in these cases, and the list can grow quite long. And here at the clinic, we're fortunate to have really experts in all of those areas who are eager and willing to help out with these complex cases.
And I guess sort of related to that, I'm guessing most patients, most kids that get these tumors come to areas of that specialize in this. I mean, how does somebody pick a place to go? I mean,
it's a great question. And I think getting these kids to the right places at the right times is an important part of this process. So just to sort of start at the beginning of this question, you know, there are good data to suggest that adults and kids who have sarcomas have better outcomes in a number of ways when they're treated at centers who are used to taking care of sarcomas. And that doesn't mean that's the only place they get care, but that means that that's the place that manages their care overall. So ideally that happens from the moment there's a suspicion on initial workup for a sarcoma, and not, you know, after a biopsy and maybe an index procedure where somebody didn't know there was a sarcoma and it turned out that there was a sarcoma. So ideally, once there's a suspicion, once a clinician does an initial workup and there's a suspicion for sarcoma, that's when the call goes out to a sarcoma center like we have here at the Cleveland Clinic. And from there, you know, we are always happy to talk with folks and see if it makes sense to bring kids over versus managing somewhere else. But if there's a true concern for a sarcoma, you know, we like to be involved from the beginning, from the biopsy to prove that there is a sarcoma, to the chemotherapy with folks like yourself, and then to the surgery and beyond. And the process for getting to a center like this, I think, can be daunting for somebody out in the community who maybe doesn't have a tie to a center that has sarcoma specialists. There's not many sarcoma centers in the country. So I think the first step is to recognize that there is a potential for a cancer and to pump the brakes a little bit and reach out to a center so that they can help guide next steps.
And of course, there's also the components that you've kind of touched on before, like psychosocial help and physical therapy and all those other services as well. So,
yep, absolutely, absolutely.
So let's shift gears a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the kinds of research you're involved in and how that might relate to some of these surgeries and
Yeah. So I, like I said, I spend about half my time in the Lerner Research Institute working in a lab that looks into a couple different things related to pediatric sarcoma and limb salvage. So one is, how can we better treat the sarcoma itself? And the other is, how do we deal with these complications that arise down the line? So, you know, we've gotten better in the last 30 to 40 years in preserving limbs and increasing the chance of long-term survival in patients who have sarcoma. But really, compared to 30 or 40 years ago, we haven't made much advance past that spot. So we dramatically made a shift with chemotherapy. We dramatically made a shift with limb salvage. And since then, the shifts have been incremental. So, you know, the questions that are looming large in this field are, how do we make the complications less and the function higher when we do perform limb salvage on a young kid? And how do we make sure that the tumor goes away and stays away? And if it spreads, how do we treat that? And how do we increase lifespan for patients who have metastatic disease or locally recurrent disease? And so in my lab, you know, one of the things we do is, whenever we do surgery on a sarcoma patient, we talk to them about potentially donating some of that tissue after it's out of the body for study in the lab. And so there's different ways we look at that tumor. We look sort of in terms of a deep dive in terms of the genetics and epigenetics and transcriptomics and the things that make up the tumor on a cellular and molecular level. And we look at what therapies might work that haven't been used before for sarcomas, and seeing if there is a next treatment laying out there somewhere that may help these patients. And in the other sort of pillar of my research lab, I look at one of the dreaded complications in these patients, which is infection. So when prosthesis or a piece of donor bone gets infected, it is a significant challenge to treat that without taking it out. And you can imagine that if you take out a child's, a majority of their femur, even their whole femur, and that gets infected and you can't retain that prosthesis, that presents significant challenge, and that's a limb-threatening situation. So, you know, it's frustrating for people in this line of work to get a patient, and particularly for patients, it's frustrating to get a patient through, you know, their cancer, get them through limb salvage surgery, only to have an infection be the cause of amputation years down the line. So I do some translational research, outcomes research, clinical research that aims to mitigate and better treat infections when they arise in these patients. And the hope is that we bring our arsenal of weapons and our toolbox for infection from antibiotics that are 20, 30, 40, 50 years old into the modern molecular area, or rather molecular era and immuno era of medicine and treatment.
What are the so infection certainly is a big problem. In terms of other complications, what are the other ones that are probably looming largest at risk? Is it local recurrence? Is it wound healing? Poor functional ability? What would be the next thing as well that needs fixed to make a big impact?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier. So one of the big problems that is not oncological, but again gets back to the durability of whatever we do for a kid to save their leg, is a failure of the implant in some way. And so that may be failure of the implant itself, like the metal or the moving pieces, or if it's bone, a fracture of the bone, or it may be loosening of that. And so loosening meaning where the implant meets the bone, or where the graft meets the patient's host bone. If that junction isn't strong, that will fail eventually, and that would necessitate a revision. And the more revisions you have, meaning repeat surgeries, exchange of parts, the higher there is a risk of infection, the function starts to go down a little bit. And so we try to minimize that. One big area is what we call aseptic loosening, where the implant that goes in loosens and comes out. And so biological fixation, like I talked about earlier, is one way to address that, where you have bone healing to bone. Another area that has become increasingly used, and this is typically in a little bit older kids, is by getting bone to grow into an implant, so that you have bone that is ingrown and ongrown into an implant, and that provides a really durable long-term solution. And so there's new implant design techniques that are aimed at inducing bone to grow into metal. And so one is called a compress osseointegration technique that uses a physical property of bone to load across bone and induce growth into the implant. And that's shown good long-term results. And the other is really fitting an implant in quite tightly into the bone, called a press fit, to induce growth between the implant and the bone. And those have been areas of active research and active advancement in pediatric limb salvage surgery. An important advancement with reference to the growth issue in pediatric limb salvage are growing implants. So they're implants, and they've been around for a few decades now, that can essentially telescope and expand and grow as the patient would physiologically grow. And so historically, that was done in a very sort of simple mechanical way, where you would insert a new piece, or you would open the patient up in the operating room and you would ratchet and extend the prosthesis. But more recently, there has been expanding use of what are called non-invasive growing implants, where an implant is implanted that has that potential and has a magnetic coil. And so the patient can come back to the office, or even at home, be put into this small portable magnetic coil, and it slowly increases the length of the implant by the order of millimeters or up to a centimeter or so at a time. And that can allow for growth of that implant with the child, with the patient, and minimize the leg length differences that are expected to result down the line.
Impressive. Early on, you said that one of the things that led to the ability to spare patients from amputations included imaging. Yes. Are there any exciting updates in terms of upcoming imaging that might continue to shift toward the ability to do limb salvage?
Yeah, I think there are a few areas that are relevant to touch on here. And so one is using advanced imaging to design and utilize patient-specific custom implants and instrumentation. So, you know, imaging has come far enough, and things like 3D printing based off of imaging have allowed us, in conjunction with some of the companies who make these implants, to design tools and implants that are based off of CT scans and MRI scans of the patient's anatomy and the patient's tumor. And so these are really coming into play in the orthopedic oncology field in the last 5 to 10 years. And really, I think orthopedic oncology is leading this charge in a way where we are able to work with these companies to design tools that allow us to use custom cutting jigs, where we can really, in a precise manner, put this cutting jig on a patient's anatomy where it fits like a glove, and then cut out an area of tumor with a degree of precision that we previously wouldn't have been able to use, and potentially spare the need for a bigger reconstruction, spare function, and then put in a custom implant that is designed specifically for that patient. And that is a big advancement in the field. Additionally, with imaging, you know, there are emerging technologies where the hope is that we can use imaging intraoperatively. So that's not only for navigation of our instruments that we use to cut, our instruments we use to reconstruct, but also potentially using markers and probes and antibodies that can tag tumor cells or tag nerves and fluorescently give off light and guide us to have a more precise resection in ways that we previously wouldn't, where you use your eyes and your hands to determine tumor tissue from not tumor tissue or nerve tissue from not nerve tissue. And can we do that in a better way by actually having these structures be tagged with something and light up in the operating room for precision resection?
Wow. Field's come a long way.
And
you're doing some great work, and you've given us some great insights today.
Yep, so. And I'm excited to see where it goes in the next 30 to 40 years. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll watch together.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for being with us.
Yep, no problem. Thank you for having me.
To make a direct online referral to our TOSSA Cancer Institute, complete our online cancer patient referral form by visiting clevelandclinic.org/cancerpatientreferrals. You will receive confirmation once the appointment is scheduled. This concludes this episode of Cancer Advances. You will find additional podcast episodes on our website, clevelandclinic.org/cancer-advances-podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, you can access real-time updates from Cleveland Clinic's Cancer Center experts on our ConsultQD website at consultqd.clevelandclinic.org/cancer. Thank you for listening. Please join us again soon.